We continue now with the Roman Breviary for spring. The feast, May 6th, St. John, Apostle and Evangelist, before the Latin Gate. From the book of St. Jerome, Priest against Jovinian. John the Apostle, one of the disciples of the Lord, who is said to have been the youngest of the apostles, and whom the faith of Christ had found as a virgin, remained a virgin, and so he is the more loved by the Lord, and reclines upon the breast of Jesus. So too, when Peter, who had a wife, did not dare to ask the Lord a question, he begged John to ask. And after the resurrection, when Mary Magdalene proclaimed that the Lord had risen from the dead, both ran to the sepulchre, but John arrived first. Again, when they were in the boat fishing in the lake of Gennesareth, and Jesus stood on the shore, the apostles did not know whom they saw. Only John, the virgin, recognized his virgin master and said to Peter, "It is the Lord." John was not only an apostle, but an evangelist and a prophet. An apostle because he wrote to the churches as a teacher. He was an evangelist because he wrote a gospel, which none of the 12 apostles but Matthew had done. A prophet because on the island of Patmos, where he had been banished by the emperor Domitian, because he bore witness to the Lord, he saw the apocalypse, containing unfathomable mysteries of future things. Tertullian relates, moreover, that at Rome he was cast into a cauldron of boiling oil, but came out healthier and more vigorous than when he was cast in. But his gospel, too, is very different from the others. Matthew begins as if writing of a man, the book of the origin of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Luke, with the priesthood of Zachary. Mark, with the prophecies of Micaiah and Isaiah. The first has the appearance of a man because of the genealogy. The second, that of an ox because of the priesthood. The third, that of a lion because of the voice of one crying in the desert, "Make ready the way of the Lord, make straight his paths." But our John, like an eagle, flies aloft and reaches the Father himself, saying, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." May 7th, St. Stanislaus, Bishop and Martyr. Stanislaus was Polish, born at Krakow, of a noble family and of pious parents, who, after being 30 years without children, obtained him from God by prayer. He gave promise, even from his infancy, of future sanctity. As a youth, he applied himself to study and made great progress in the sacred canons and in theological science. After the death of his parents, he wished to embrace the monastic life and accordingly distributed his considerable inheritance among the poor. But by the providence of God, he was made a canon of Krakow and special preacher by Bishop Lambert, to whose see, although unwillingly, he was afterwards elected. In this office, he shone in every pastoral virtue, especially in charity to the poor. Boleslaus was then king of Poland. The saint incurred his grave displeasure for publicly reprimanding his notorious immorality. Wherefore, in a solemn parliament of the kingdom, the king summoned Stanislaus to appear before him in judgment on a false accusation of having taken possession of a country district, which he had purchased in the name of his cathedral. The bishop, not being able to produce the deeds, and the witnesses being afraid to speak the truth, he promised to bring before the court within 3 days the one who sold the land, by name Peter, who had died 3 years previously. His proposition excited laughter, but was accepted. For 3 days, the man of God applied himself to fasting and prayer, and on the day appointed, after offering up the sacrifice of the Mass, he commanded Peter to rise from his grave, who there and then returned to life and followed the bishop to the king's tribunal, and there, in the bewilderment of the king and the audience, he gave his testimony regarding the sale of the land and the price duly paid him by the bishop. When this was done, he again fell asleep in the Lord. After several times admonishing Boleslas, but all to no purpose, Stanislaus finally separated him from communion with the faithful. Maddened with anger, the king sent soldiers into the church that they might stab the holy bishop. They tried 3 times to do so, but were each time repulsed by an unseen force. At last, the impious king, finding the priest of God offering the unspotted victim at the altar, beheaded him with his own hand. The corpse was cut in pieces and strewn over the fields, but it was miraculously defended from wild beasts by eagles. Shortly after, the cannons of Krakow, guided by a glow in the sky at night, collected the scattered members and very carefully placed them in their natural position, when they were suddenly joined together in such a way that no traces of any wounds were visible. Afterwards, God showed the sanctity of his servant by many other miracles after his death, which led the Supreme Pontiff, Innocent IV, to add him to the number of the saints. And the Supreme Pontiff, Clement VIII, having added the feast day of St. Stanislaus to the Roman breviary, ordered the memory of the glorious martyr to be celebrated everywhere with a double office. May 8th, the apparition of St. Michael the Archangel. That the blessed Archangel Michael has often appeared to men is attested both by the authority of the sacred books and by the ancient tradition of the saints. And so the memory of these apparitions is commemorated in many places. As of old, Michael was honored by the synagogue of the Jews, so is he now by the Church of God as guardian and patron. And when Gelasius I was supreme pontiff in Apulia, on the summit of Mount Gargano, at the foot of which the Sipentines dwell, there was a celebrated apparition of the Archangel Michael. For it came to pass that a bull from the herds of cattle of a certain man on Mount Gargano strayed a considerable distance, and after a long search they found it jammed in the mouth of a cave. But when one of them shot an arrow to pierce the bull, the arrow rebounding came back to the archer himself. This circumstance caused so much fear in the bystanders, and in those who heard of it later, that no one dared to go near the cave. The people of Siponto consulted the bishop, who answered that it would be well to seek the interpretation from God, and ordered 3 days fasting and prayer. At the end of the 3 days, the Archangel Michael intimated to the bishop that the place was under his protection, and that what had occurred was an indication of his wish that God should be worshipped there, in honor of himself and of the angels. Whereupon the bishop went to the cave together with the people. When they saw that in shape it had a certain resemblance to a church, they began to celebrate the divine services in that place, which was glorified later by many miracles. Not long after, Pope Boniface dedicated a church in honor of St. Michael in the Great Circus of Rome on the 3rd of the calends of October, September 29th, the day on which the church celebrates the memory of all the angels. But today's feast is kept in commemoration of the apparition of Michael the Archangel. May 9th, St. Gregory Nazianzen, Bishop, Confessor, and Doctor of the Church. Gregory, a Cappadocian nobleman, surnamed the Theologian on account of his extraordinary learning in the sacred sciences, was born at Nazianzus in Cappadocia. He, together with St. Basil, followed through a complete course of studies at Athens, after which he applied himself to the study of the sacred sciences. The friends retired to a monastery where they spent several years in the same studies, framing their opinions not out of their own heads, but according to the interpretation of the ancients. Owing to their reputation for learning and virtue, they were called to the office of preaching the truths of the gospel, and became the fathers in Jesus Christ of many sons. Gregory, after a while, returned home. He was first made bishop of Sasima, and afterwards administered the church of Nazianzus. Being called later on to govern the church of Constantinople, after having cleansed the city of the errors of heresy, he converted it to the Catholic faith, which should have merited for him the highest esteem of all men, but excited the envy of many. Therefore, when subsequently great discord arose among the bishops, resigning his see of his own accord, he made use of those words of the prophet, "If this tempest be stirred up on my account, cast me into the sea, that you may cease to be tossed." Whereupon he returned to Nazianzus, and having secured the appointment of Eulalius as bishop of that church, he devoted his whole time to contemplation and writing upon divine things. He wrote much, both in prose and verse, with admirable piety and eloquence. In the opinion of learned and holy men, there's nothing to be found in his writings which is not conformable to true piety and Catholic truth, or which anyone could reasonably call in question. He was a most vigorous defender of the doctrine that the Son is consubstantial with the Father. No one ever led a more praiseworthy life than he, neither was any man more earnest in prayer. Leading the life of a monk in the country, and unceasingly taken up with writing and reading, having reached a venerable old age, he departed to the heavenly life when Theodosius was emperor. May 10th, Saint Antoninus, bishop and confessor. Antoninus was born at Florence of respectable parents. He gave great promise, even in boyhood, of future sanctity. Having, at the age of 16, entered the order of preachers, he at once began to be conspicuous for the highest virtues. He declared ceaseless war against idleness. After a short sleep at night, he was the first present at matins, and when they were over, he spent the remainder of the night in prayer, or at least in reading or writing books. And if at times unwelcome sleep oppressed his weary limbs, he would lean his head for a while against the wall, and then, shaking off the drowsiness, he would soon resume his holy vigils with renewed earnestness. Being a most rigid observer of religious discipline, he never ate meat except in the case of severe illness. His bed was the ground or a bare board. He always wore a hair shirt and sometimes an iron girdle around his bare skin, and always observed the strictest chastity. Such was his skill in giving counsel that he was called by the nickname of Antoninus the Counselor. He so excelled in humility that even when superior of convents and provinces, he used to fulfill most abjectly the most menial duties of the monastery. He was proclaimed Archbishop of Florence by Eugenius IV, and at length sadly consented to accept the office, only out of respectful awe of the threats of the Apostolic See. It would be difficult to describe the prudence, piety, charity, meekness, and apostolic zeal with which he discharged that office. It was remarkable what genius he possessed for thoroughly learning nearly all the sciences by himself, without the aid of a teacher. Finally, after many labors, and having published noteworthy doctrinal books, having received the Holy Eucharist and Extreme Unction, embracing the image of the Crucified, he joyfully welcomed death on the 6th of the Nones of May, May 2nd, in the year 1459. Noted for miracles during his life and after his death, he was added to the number of the saints by Adrian the 6th in the year of our Lord, 1523. May 12th, Saints Nereus, Achilleus, Domitilla the Virgin, and Pancratius, martyrs. Nereus and Achilleus, brothers, were eunuchs in the service of Flavia Domitilla, and were baptized together with her and her mother, Plautilla, by St. Peter. They had persuaded Domitilla to consecrate her virginity to God, and because of this they were accused of being Christians by Aurelian, to whom she was betrothed. They made an admirable confession of their faith and were banished to the Isle of Pontia. Here another inquiry was made, after which they were scourged. They were shortly afterwards taken to Terracina, and by order of Mincius Rufus were tortured on the rack and with torches. when they resolutely declared that as they had been baptized by blessed Peter the Apostle, no torture should ever induce them to offer sacrifice to idols, they were beheaded. Their bodies were taken to Rome by their disciple, Auspicius, Domitilla's tutor, and were buried on the Ardeatine Way. Flavia Domitilla, a Roman virgin and niece of the emperors Titus and Domitian, received the holy veil of virginity from the blessed Pope Clement. She was accused of being a Christian by Aurelian, her betrothed, son of the consul Titus Aurelius, and the emperor Domitian banished her to the Isle of Pontia, where she testified for a long time in prison. She was finally taken to Terracina, where she again confessed Christ. Finding that her constancy was not to be shaken, the judge ordered the apartment where she lodged to be set on fire, and so she, together with her foster sisters, the virgins Theodora and Euphrosyne, finished her course in a glorious martyrdom on the Nones of May 7th, when Trajan was emperor. Their bodies were found entire and were buried by a deacon named Caesarius. This is the day on which the bodies of the two brothers and that of Domitilla were transferred from the deaconry of St. Hadrian to the basilica called Fasciola. Pancratius was born in Phrygia of a noble family. When a boy of 14, he went to Rome in the reign of the emperors Diocletian and Maximian. There he received baptism from the Roman pontiff, was instructed in the Christian faith, and soon after was arrested on that account. Firmly refusing to sacrifice to the gods, he offered his neck to the executioner with manly courage and obtained the glorious crown of martyrdom. During the night, a lady by name Octavilla took away his body and, after embalming it, had it buried on the Aurelian Way. May 13th, St. Robert Bellarmine, Bishop, Confessor, and Doctor of the Church. Robert, a native of Montepulciano and of the noble family of Bellarmine, had for his mother the most pious Cynthia Cervini, sister of Pope Marcellus II. From the first, he was conspicuous for exemplary piety and most chaste manners, earnestly desiring this one thing, to please God alone and to win souls to Christ. He attended the college of the Society of Jesus in his native town, where he was highly commended for his intelligence and modesty. At the age of 18, he entered the same society at Rome and was a model of all religious virtues. Having passed through the course of philosophy at the Roman college, he was sent first to Florence, then to Monreal, later to Padua to teach sacred theology, and afterwards to Louvain, where, not yet a priest, he ably discharged the office of preacher. After ordination at Louvain, he taught theology with such success that he brought back many heretics to the unity of the Church and was regarded throughout Europe as a most brilliant theologian. And St. Charles, Bishop of Milan, and others keenly sought after him. Recalled to Rome at the wish of Pope Gregory the 13th, he taught the science of controversial theology at the Roman College, and there, as spiritual director, he guided the angelic youth, Aloysius, in the paths of holiness. He governed the Roman College and then the Neapolitan province of the Society of Jesus in accordance with the spirit of St. Ignatius. Again summoned to Rome, he was employed by Clement VIII in the most important affairs of the Church, with the greatest advantage to the Christian state. Then, against his will and in spite of opposition, he was admitted among the number of the cardinals, because, as the pontiff publicly declared, he did not have his equal among theologians in the Church of God at that time. He was consecrated bishop by the same pope and administered the Archdiocese of Capua in a most saintly manner for 3 years. Having resigned his office, he lived in Rome until his death as a most impartial and trusty counselor to the Supreme Pontiff. He wrote much and in an admirable manner. His principal merit lies in his complete victory in the struggle against the new errors, during which he distinguished himself as a strenuous and outstanding vindicator of Catholic tradition and the rights of the Roman See. He gained this victory by following St. Thomas as his guide and teacher, by a prudent consideration of the needs of his times, by his irrefragable teaching, and by a most abundant wealth of testimony, well chosen from the sacred writings and from the very rich fountain of the fathers of the church. He is eminently noted for very numerous short works, for fostering piety, and especially for that golden catechism which he never failed to explain to the young and ignorant, both at Capua and at Rome, although preoccupied with other very important affairs. A contemporary cardinal declared that Robert was sent by God for the instruction of Catholics, for the guidance of the good, and for the confusion of heretics. St. Francis de Sales regarded him as a fountain of learning. The Supreme Pontiff, Benedict XIV, called him the hammer of heretics, and Benedict XV proclaimed him the model of promoters and defenders of the Catholic religion. He was most zealous in the religious life, and he maintained that manner of life after having been chosen as one of the empurpled cardinals. He did not want any wealth beyond what was necessary. He was satisfied with a moderate household and a scanty fare and clothing. He did not strive to enrich his relatives, and he could scarcely be induced to relieve their poverty even occasionally. He had the lowest opinion of himself and was of wonderful simplicity of soul. He had an extraordinary love for the Mother of God. He spent many hours daily in prayer. He ate very sparingly and fasted 3 times a week. Uniformly austere with himself, he burned with charity towards his neighbor and was often called the father of the poor. He earnestly strove that he might not stain his baptismal innocence by even the slightest fault. Almost 80 years old, he fell in his last illness at St. Andrew's on the Quirinal Hill, and in it he showed his usual radiant virtue. Pope Gregory XV and many cardinals visited him on his deathbed, lamenting the loss of such a great pillar of the Church. He fell asleep in the Lord in the year 1621, on the day of the sacred stigmata of St. Francis, the memory of which he had been instrumental in having celebrated everywhere. The whole city mourned his death, unanimously proclaiming him a saint. The Supreme Pontiff, Pius XI, inscribed his name first in the number of the blessed and then in that of the saints, and shortly afterwards, by a decree of the Sacred Congregation of Rites, he declared him a doctor of the Universal Church. His body is honored with pious veneration at Rome in the church of St. Ignatius, near the tomb of St. Aloysius, as he himself had desired. May 14th, St. Boniface, Martyr. John Baptiste de La Salle, born of an honorable family at Reims, when still a boy, showed by his manners and actions that he was called by destiny to the Lord and was to be adorned with the excellence of holiness. As a youth, he studied literature and the philosophical sciences at the Academy at Reims. During this time, although his mental powers and his lively and pleasant disposition endeared him to all, he nevertheless shrank from the company of his fellows, so that being inclined to solitude, he might the more easily find time for God. Already having been for some time enlisted in the ranks of the clergy, he was enrolled among the canons of Reims at the age of 16 years. He went to Paris to study theology at the University of the Sorbonne and was admitted to the Sulpician Seminary, but he was soon forced to return home because of the death of his parents, and undertook the education of his brothers, which he carried on without meanwhile interrupting his sacred studies, and with the greatest success, as was proved by subsequent events. He was finally ordained priest and said his first Mass with the intense faith and ardor of the soul which, throughout his whole life, he brought to those holy mysteries. Meanwhile, burning with zeal for the salvation of souls, he devoted himself wholly to their service. He undertook the direction of the Sisters of the Infant Jesus, founded for the education of girls, and not only managed them most prudently, but save their institute from dissolution. From this time onward, he turned his attention to the education of poor boys in religion and good morals. And God had raised him up for this very end, namely that he should found in his church a new family of religious men, and should look after boys, schools, especially of poor boys, with unceasing and efficient care. And indeed, this duty entrusted to him by divine providence was successfully accomplished, in spite of very much opposition and great hardships, by the foundation of an institute of brothers, which he named the Christian Schools. His male associates in this great and arduous work he had first received into his own house, and then, establishing them in a more suitable dwelling, thoroughly inspired them with his method and with those wise laws and regulations which were afterwards confirmed by Benedict XIII. Because of humility and love of poverty, he first resigned this canonry and distributed all his property among the poor, and later also, after many unsuccessful attempts to do so, he of his own will resigned the government of the institute which he had founded. But meanwhile, his solicitude for the brothers and for the schools which he had opened in different places did not lessen, though he began to give himself more diligently to God. Showing his hatred for self in constant fastings, in the use of the discipline and in other austerities, he spent his nights in prayer, at length conspicuous for every kind of virtue, especially obedience and zeal for fulfilling the divine will, and love and devotion to the apostolic see, full of merit, and having devoutly received the sacraments, he fell asleep in the Lord in the 68th year of his age. The Supreme Pontiff, Leo XIII, placed him in the list of the blessed, and illustrious by new miracles, he was adorned with honors of the saints in the year of Jubilee, 1900. May 16th, Saint Eubald, Bishop and Confessor. Eubald, born at Gubbio in Umbria, of a noble family, was from his earliest years well trained in piety and learning. When grown up, he was frequently urged to marry, but nothing could shake his resolution of leading a life of celibacy. Upon being ordained priest, he gave his inheritance to the poor and the churches, and entering the Institute of Canons Regular of the Order of St. Augustine, he brought them to his native place, and for some time led with them a most holy life. The fame of his sanctity having spread far and wide, the Supreme Pontiff, Honorius II, placed him, against his will, in charge of the Church of Gubbio, and he was adorned with the dignity of episcopal consecration. Then, having returned to his see, he changed nothing whatever in his mode of life, but he began to apply himself more than ever to the practice of every kind of virtue, in order that he might the more effectually, both by word and example, procure the salvation of others, for he was a pattern to the flock in all earnestness. His food was little, his dress unpretending, his bed hard and very poor. He always carried about in his body the mortification of the cross, and every day refreshed his spirit with his insatiable zeal for prayer. And so he acquired such an admirable meekness that he not only bore the worst injuries and insults with patience, but by a strange impulse of love, he even encompassed his persecutors with every proof of kindness. During the last 2 years of his life, when he was afflicted with protracted infirmities, in the midst of the most acute bodily pains with which he was cleansed like gold in the furnace, he unceasingly gave thanks to God. And on the feast of Pentecost, after governing for many years in the most laudable manner the diocese entrusted to him, he slept in peace, venerated for his holy works and miracles. Pope Celestine III inscribed him in the number of the saints. He is conspicuous in particular for his power of driving out unclean spirits. His body, incorrupt for several centuries, is honored with great devotion by the faithful of his native place, whom he has more than once rescued from imminent danger. May 17th, St. Pascal Baylon, Confessor. Pascal Baylon, born of poor and pious parents at Torrehermosa, a town of the Diocese of Sigüenza in Aragon, from tender years gave many signs of future sanctity. Endowed with a good disposition, particularly zealous of heavenly things, he passed his boyhood and youth in tending flocks. He loved this kind of life, especially because it seemed to him in the highest degree suitable and fitting for fostering humility and preserving innocence. He showed moderation in eating and was assiduous in prayer. He had such influence over his contemporaries and companions, and was so dear to them, that he used to settle their disputes, correct their faults, instruct their ignorance, and keep them out of idleness. He was honored and loved with the greatest affection as the parent and teacher of all, and even then was named the Blessed by many. And so did this flower of the enclosed valleys indeed grow up very happily in the world, that desert land where there is no water. Planted in the house of the Lord, he shed everywhere around him a wondrous odor of sanctity. Then Paschal, having embraced a more severe rule of life by entering the order of minors, rejoiced as a giant to run his way. Devoting himself wholly to the service of his Lord, he pondered day and night how he could more and more conform to that rule. And so it soon came to pass that even his seniors proposed him as an example of seraphic perfection, and that should be imitated. As for himself, he put himself in the humble ranks of the lay brothers. Looking on himself as the refuse of all, with the greatest cheerfulness, he took on himself any tiring and menial work of the house, as if it belonged to him by a special right, and worked at it with humility and patience. He afflicted his healthy flesh with mortification whenever it rebelled against the spirit, and brought it into subjection. And constant in his self-denial, day by day, he extended a more fervent spirit to the things which are to come. The Virgin Mother of God, to whose service he had dedicated himself from his earliest years, he honored as his mother by daily devotions, and prayed to her with filial confidence. It is difficult to describe how ardent a state of devotion he had towards the most holy sacrament of the Eucharist. Even after his death, it seemed to linger in his body, for lying on the pallet, his eyes were seen to open and close twice during the elevation of the sacred host, to the great astonishment of all that were present. The truth of that mystery he publicly and openly professed before heretics, and for that reason he endured great and grievous suffering. Attacks were frequently made on his life, but by a special providence of God he was rescued from the hands of the wicked men. Frequently, when at prayer, he became bereft of all his senses, and in that sweet deprivation he swooned away with love. It was on these occasions that he was supposed to imbibe that heavenly wisdom, whereby he, an unpolished and unlettered man, was enabled to give answers on the most obscure mysteries of faith, and even to write some books. Finally, with every merit, and at the very hour which he had foretold, he joyfully passed to the Lord in the year of salvation 1592, on the 16th of the calends of June, May 17th, the same day on which he had been born, it being the feast of Pentecost and the 52nd year of his age. As these and other virtues obtained great fame for him, and being noted for miracles both before and after his death, the Supreme Pontiff, Paul V, gave him the title of Blessed, and Alexander VIII added him to the list of the saints. At length, Leo XIII declared and appointed him, in a special manner, the patron in heaven of Eucharistic conferences, and likewise of all societies of the Most Holy Eucharist, whether founded up to that time or that might be founded in the future. May 18th, Saint Venantius, Martyr. Venantius, a native of Camerino, when 15 years old, was brought to trial before Antiochus because he was a Christian. Antiochus was governor of Camerino under the Emperor Decius, and Venantius came before the governor at the city gate. The governor for a long time tried to influence him with promises and threats, and then ordered him to be beaten with whips and heavily chained. but he was miraculously released by an angel. He was then burned with torches and hung face downwards over the smoky fire. Anastasius, commander of a wing of the army, marveling at his firmness under torture, and because he had seen him a second time relieved by the angel who was walking in the smoke in the white garment, believed in Christ and was baptized together with his household by the holy priest Porphyrius, with whom he shortly after gained the palm of martyrdom. But Venantius was brought before the governor, and after he was urged in vain to abandon the faith of Christ, he was thrown into prison by him. The herald Attalus was sent to him, who told him that he also had once been a Christian, but had renounced that religion for this reason, because he saw it to be a foolish faith, that the Christians gave up the things of the present in an empty hope of the future. But the noble athlete of Christ, knowing well the snares of our crafty enemy, drove the devil's servant from his presence, whereupon he was again led before the governor, and all his teeth were knocked out, and his jaws broken, and mangled in this manner. He was thrown into a dung pit. But being delivered by an angel also from that place, he again stood before a judge, who, while Venantius was addressing him, fell from the judgment seat and died, exclaiming, "The God of Venantius is the true one. Destroy our gods." When this was made known to the governor, he immediately ordered Venantius to be thrown to the lions, but they were not wild to him, and laid themselves at his feet. The saint meanwhile instructed the people in the Christian faith. He was therefore removed from that place, and again thrown into prison. And next day, when Porphyrius told the governor that he had seen in a vision at night that those whom Venantius had sprinkled with water were shining with a bright light, but that the governor himself was hidden in a thick fog, the governor, burning with rage, ordered Porphyrius to be beheaded on the spot, and then that Venantius be dragged until nightfall through places covered with brambles and thistles. He was left half dead, but he again presented himself in the morning to the governor, and by his command he was at once to be cast headlong from a cliff. But there also he was miraculously preserved, and once more dragged for a mile over rough places. There, when the soldiers were burning with thirst, Venantius made the sign of the cross, and water flowed from a rock in a neighboring dell. And on this rock Venantius left the imprint of his knees, as may even now be seen in his church. Many were deeply moved by that miracle and believed in Christ, and were all beheaded, together with Venantius, on that very spot, by the governor's orders. So severe were the lightnings and earthquakes which occurred at that time that the governor fled. But he was not able to escape divine justice, and a few days after met with a most shameful death. Meanwhile, the Christians buried the bodies of Venantius and the others in a becoming place, and they still rest in the church dedicated to Venantius at Camerino. May 19th, St. Peter Celestine, Pope and Confessor. Peter, who from the name he took as Pope is called Celestine, was born at Esernia in the Samnite country of respectable and Catholic parents. Before he had grown up, he retired into a lonely place, that he might guard his soul from the temptations of the world. There he nourished his soul with contemplation, bringing his body into subjection, and wearing an iron chain next to his bare flesh. He founded, under the rule of Saint Benedict, the congregation which was afterwards called the Celestines. And so, when like a candle set upon a candlestick, he could no longer be hid, the Roman Church having for a long time been deprived of a shepherd, he was elected to the chair of Peter without his knowledge and in his absence. The news of his election filled all men with a great amazement, as it did with sudden joy. But when he was established in the exalted place of the pontificate, distracted with various troubles, he saw that it was almost impossible to attend to his accustomed meditations, and resigned the burden, as well as the honor, of his own free will. And then, returning to his former mode of life, he fell asleep in the Lord. A glittering cross in the air before the door of his cell made his precious death still more glorious. He was made illustrious by many miracles, both before and after his death, and these being seriously considered, Clement V, 11 years after he died, included him among the number of the saints. The simplicity of the just man is laughed to scorn. This is the wisdom of this world, to hide one's feelings by artifice, to veil one's thoughts in words, to make falsehood appear truth, and the truth falsehood. Certainly this prudence young men learn by experience, and boys pay to learn it. Those who know it take pride in it, looking down on the others. Those who know it not humbly and timidly admire the others who know it. This evil of duplicity, veiled under an honorable name, is esteemed by them, and perversity of mind is called good breeding. This wisdom will have its votaries seek after the highest dignities, rejoice in the vanity of earthly glory, and repay with interest any injuries they may have received. It teaches them never to give way to others while they have strength to resist, and to obtain by a feigned goodness what they cannot by open wickedness. Whereas, on the contrary, the wisdom of the just is not to practice dissimulation, to speak what is in one's heart, to love the truth as it is, and to avoid falsehood, to do good without looking for return, and gladly to suffer evil rather than inflict it, never to seek revenge for an injury, and to think of it again to suffer reproach for the sake of the truth. But this simplicity of the just is laughed to scorn, for the wise of this world look upon purity of heart as foolishness. Whatsoever is done by innocence seems to these carnal minds merely stupidity, and whatsoever is approved by truth is to them but folly. What is more foolish in the eyes of the world than to make our words express our thought, not to use dissimulation, not to repay injuries with abuse, to pray for those who speak evil of us, to abandon our possessions, and seek after poverty, not to resist him who takes from us what is ours, and to offer the other cheek to him who smites us. This concludes the Roman Breviary for spring. We trust and pray that these tapes have been very helpful, inspirational, and interesting for you. Please listen to them often. Pray for those who made the tapes available to you. And we request your help in letting others know that these tapes are available through Patrick Henry, 7067 South Tumbleweed Drive, Safford, Arizona. That's Patrick Henry, 7067 South Tumbleweed Drive, Safford, Arizona, 85546.